got no answer for the potential of a short corn crop. That's the thing that people here seem most worried about.
Well, Peter, let me just say, when I say, you know, no answer, I think I made clear as well that as a result of, you know, the conditions that we've seen so far this spring, which have been less than ideal, that was a huge motivating factor in our opening up, you know, what is going to amount to 24 million acres of CRP ground for haying and grazing. And, you know, that's unchecked without penalty. And, you know, we continue to believe that, you know, not the solution to the problem, because I don't want to come here touting a solution, but we believe it could be part of a, you know, a broader solution that is going to help ease some of that demand for feed grains in the event that things continue to play out where it, you know, appears that we're not going to have less than ideal, or we are going to have less than ideal conditions for getting this corn and bean crop started this year.
Could you give us some idea where you sit with implementation of this farm bill?
Well, we've had a meeting already on implementation. We've, you know, formed an implementation team that is going to be headed up by, you know, three of our senior people within the agency. We're going to use a plan much similar to what we did in 2002. Each mission area will have representatives to, you know, to this team of people that will be charged with implementation. We think we can get this thing on the ground pretty quickly. Certainly the biggest question, you know, we're getting right now is how quickly can you get out the direct payments for the 2008 crop? And the answer is we think we can get them out very quickly, and that should, you know, be coming down the pike relatively soon. But overall, you know, we're geared up for a full implementation. Some of this is going to be complex, but, you know, our career people really rise to this challenge always, and they're going to rise to this one as well.
Who are those three people?
Deputy Undersecretary Floyd Gabler, Scott Steele, who is our budget director for the entire agency, and then Lowell, gosh, you're going to stump me here. Lowell, who is our congressional affairs guy, who basically kind of was our point person on the Hill, and he probably has more general knowledge of the entire farm bill, as not necessarily each individual section, but the entire farm bill, as anybody within the agency. And so he'll be a good, you know, person to sit on that group as well.
Are there other solutions that you have for livestock producers, particularly pork producers, like early out of CRP or relaxing the RFS or anything?
Well, you know, we've done quite a bit for pork producers as well, and I, you know, one of the things in my remarks I tried to acknowledge that we know they're in a difficult period right now. So, you know, some in American agriculture are prospering. The pork industry and a lot of our livestock industry is not. You know, we tried to acknowledge that. One of the things, you know, that we did do just a couple of weeks ago was the large pork purchase, the $50 million that we used Section 32 funds to purchase pork products. We worked with the industry to develop a plan where, you know, that purchase will actually be for products that are going to come from, you know, mature females within the pork sector, so that, you know, in effect you will be decreasing their productive capacity going forward. That should help ease some of the oversupply situation, improve prices. The producers I met with earlier on the National Pork Producers Board said it already has achieved that objective, even though, you know, we haven't actually procured the product yet. And so, you know, we're always going to be looking at those kind of options as well to, you know, ensure that, you know, I don't want to say profitability, because obviously during these kind of periods of time, that's, you know, too strong of a statement. But, you know, we've seen pork prices move up, you know, $10 to $15 a hundredweight just in the last several weeks. And so things have gotten a little bit better already as a result of some of what we've done.
Will you look at those other options?
No, we're in the process of, you know, going out for bid on that right now. But again, as they have...
When,
you know,
do you think it will be...
You know, I don't know on that. That's a detail level that I just don't get involved in. But these things turn over, you know, very quickly.
What can you tell us about South Korean beef at this point? Do you have an update on that situation?
Well, obviously, you know, we continue to struggle, you know, with the South Koreans and with, the, you know, the public reaction that has occurred over there, you know, to our beef products. You know, from the U.S. standpoint, obviously, we feel like, you know, we have negotiated an agreement with the South Koreans. We're going to continue to, you know, to press them to honor that agreement so that we can get beef moving here, you know, within a very, very short period of time, a matter of weeks, so that, you know, we can restore that market.
So
obviously,
you're not
we're trying to be, we're not renegotiating the protocols. You know, we're trying to be sensitive to them, working, you know, with them, hearing their concerns, getting them in touch with our producers so that, you know, if certain things can be done on a commercial basis between, you know, an importer in Korea and a seller here, you know, that for market purposes, I mean, obviously that's should be free to happen. If, you know, if they want to specify certain things, certain requirements between private transactions, they ought to be free to do that. You know, we're trying to make sure that they understand that they are in touch with our industry and they're communicating so that we can see this market reopen here in fairly short order. But it's been a tough period in Korea. I mean, just literally tens of thousands of protesters showing up on these kinds of things. Just, you know, something that's kind of mind-boggling, really.
How's the secretary's meeting in Rome going at the FAO?
They're having good meetings there. You know, there's over 40 ministers in attendance at this Rome meeting, and so it's obviously a topic that is of you know, great interest to the world. You know, the FAO as well has a number of ministers there from African regions that have seen some of the, you know, the higher retail food price inflation numbers that we've seen around the globe as well, and you know, hearing their concerns about, you know, the impact on retail food prices. You know, from our standpoint, you know, our message is wanting to make sure that, you know, we're dealing with facts here in this situation in terms of, you know, the real causes of the food price inflation that we've seen here in this country, you know, which, you know, could be as high as, you know, 5% or perhaps even a little bit higher, which is, as I noted, is, you know, double what we've seen historically to those countries that, you know, perhaps even seeing 40% inflation. You know, our economists have looked at this. They believe there is a, you know, culprit here, or a cause, if you will, that is accounting for a vast, vast majority of that, and that is rising, you know, energy prices. That is $130 crude that is causing that food price inflation. We want to make sure we continue to put that message out there because we think, you know, there's been a lot of blame scattered around here and various things. Some of it is factual, some of it is not. We're trying to get as many of those facts on the table as we can, similar to our announcement from a couple of weeks ago, and Secretary Schaefer is going to keep delivering that message over there as well because we think it's an important contribution to make to this debate.
Beyond the pork purchase, if we have a short crop, will you look at opening CRP early or relaxing the RFS?
Well, let me just say, you know, this we're have said, and we, you know, we're going to continue to say that we continue to analyze this CRP situation all the time. Hence, you know, the announcement that we already made in terms of opening it up for really unrestricted and penalty-free hay and grazing. So, you know, we are monitoring this. We're going to continue to monitor this, particularly as, the, you know, the crops keep developing and, you know, to see what, you know, how our production is going to turn out there. And, you know, that's going to be more important than ever that we keep track of this, you know, as this fall's harvest approaches.
And the RFS?
You know, the RFS, as I told the group, it's, you know, scheduled to expire.
You're talking about the
Builders. I was thinking you said the tax credit. You're talking about the RFS. You know, let me just say, you know, this is part of the energy bill that we supported. We continue to support this. You know, the point we're trying to make, and again, in this category of, you know, sorting through the facts versus, you know, other aspects of it. I mean, understand the levels of ethanol production that we're seeing in this country are market-driven. They're not RFS-driven at this point. You know, with $130, you know, a barrel crude, that is driving alternative production at a lower cost. And so, you know, every one of these plants that can produce, you know, is doing as much as they can because, you know, the market is telling them we need a lower cost source of fuel here. And so it's the market that's driving that increase in capacity, you know, which is obviously driving, you know, greater demand for the corn as well. It's not the RFS.
And is
you mentioned that your sense is that blending credit won't be extended.
I didn't say that. I said in the past, extending that blender's credit was a given.
Right.
You know, I think recently it's occurred really almost without debate in the Congress because it was such a given. I don't, my point is, you know, because of where we are and the maturity of this industry, I think that, you know, it's going to be subject to a lot of debate this time around.
What about the import tariff then?
Well, the import tariff, as you know, was impacted by the Farm Bill, and it was extended, help me here, guys, till 2010 as part of that Farm Bill debate. So in some ways, Congress has already spoken on that issue.
Well, they're tied together, the blender's credit and the tariff, right?
Now, yeah, although it was but the credit was not extended as part of the Farm Bill. It was altered, but it was not extended.
But come 2010, what is your sense on the import tariff comparable to your sense on the blending credit?
You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, okay, that is beyond the period of time where I will be, okay, where I am. The Bush administration will be in place. You know, so that's our 5-year plan is in months now. So, so I don't know, honestly.
What about the future? You know, with the high input costs and the price of land, all that stuff. How do we keep youth and want to take over for the next generation?
Well, you know, this is a concern, and boy, you know, we raised a lot of this concern during the entire course of, you know, the Farm Bill debate, 2 years worth, and I think to some extent people were tired of us, you know, talking about beginning farmers and our aging farm population and the need, you know, to bring the best and brightest back to the farm. You know, for the most part, this Farm Bill, you know, while it perhaps does, you know, a few things here and there to talk about beginning farmers, there's no real concerted effort to aid beginning farmers. You know, in our plan, we would have given them, you know, a much higher direct payment, you know, during their early years of production. And, you know, those kinds of things were, you know, rejected by the Congress. So there's really no what I would call concerted effort to help beginning farmers. So, that, you know, it's going to keep being a problem out there. It's one I believe, you know, will have to be addressed at some point because, you know, our farm population does continue to age. Our best, you know, and brightest, you know, really, I think, should have more farming opportunities than what they currently have, particularly given the fact that, you know, obviously food dependency, but now, you know, a bigger and bigger percentage of our energy coming from agricultural production. I mean, you know, we've got to think more and more about that next generation and how do we get them in the business.
I get one more question that I need you to.
Okay. One more. Is that it?
Could you follow up on just the whole comment about the corn-based ethanol industry becoming more mature than it ever has before? Is that an accurate reflection of your remarks?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question that the corn-based ethanol industry is you know, far more, you know, mature than what it was, you know, not that long ago. Certainly way more mature than it was a decade ago. You know, we've seen greater efficiencies. You know, we've seen certainly size and scale has changed dramatically, and that's kind of a given. But, you know, this is an industry that is highly efficient. You know, producing a low-cost product that is, you know, extremely competitive compared to, you know, petroleum-based products at this point. So, I think it, you know, there's no question it's an economic force out there, and I would characterize that as, you know, maturing as a result of that. It's not fledgling out there. It's a driver in this marketplace, and they're competing head-to-head.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Good to see you again, sir.
So does that look good enough for you?